PCJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Pehong.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome again to another edition of Happy Station from PCJ Radio International. This week, we're paying tribute to Dean Martin. But to help us do that, we actually have a special guest that will be joining us on today's program. She is the daughter of Dean Martin, Dina Martin, who's also a singer herself. Now, she did start her singing career way back in the 1960s when performing on her father's television program, The Dean Martin Show. She also recorded a few singles for the Reprise label. Let's take a listen to one of them right now. Now, she wasn't, of course, as successful as other daughters of the Rat Pack, for example, Nancy Sinatra. But nevertheless, she did make an attempt. It's only been in the last maybe 15 years or so that she has become a well-known entertainer herself. Dina Martin with a song called Baby I See You that was produced by Lee Hazelwood.
It hurt at the start when you took my heart and then disconnected. You tarnished my name, so I bear the blame while you're resurrected. Those long private sessions and cool one expressions found somebody new. She may turn on, but I'm glad you're gone, 'cause baby, I see you. Don't tell me that you don't think like you do, 'cause I know you better. You made like a saint, and that babe you ain't, for you sure misled her. Those fancy cut tweeds and chivalrous deeds don't clutter my view. I know you've lied, 'cause I've looked inside, and baby, I see you. I thought to impose and try to expose that beautiful person, but I'll make no sound and watch you go down in your private ocean. You'll have to someday back up all you say, and you're no true blue. You're gonna crawl, and her love will fall, 'cause baby, she'll see you. Cause she's gonna see you.
Dina Martin, daughter of Dean Martin, with Baby, I See You. Dina Martin has actually been on a worldwide tour, traveling to many corners of the world, performing new songs as well as songs made popular by her father. Many people have called the Memories Are Made of This tour. Recently, Margaret Thornby of ABC Radio National had a chance to sit down with Dina Martin while she was on tour in Australia. We're going to listen to that interview, which is quite interesting to hear about the Dean Martin household and some of the myths that Dean Martin, that actually surrounded Dean Martin. Before we get to the interview, Dean Martin's hit from 1964 that kicked the Beatles out of the chart, Everybody Loves Somebody.
Everybody in love somehow. Something your kiss just told me, my sometime is now. Everybody finds somebody someplace. There's no telling where love may appear. Something in my heart keeps saying, my someplace is here. If I had it in my power, I'd arrange for every girl to have your charm. Then every minute, every hour, every boy would find what I found in your arms. Everybody loves somebody somehow. And although my dream was overdue, your love made it well worth waiting for someone like you.
If I had my power,
I would arrange for every girl to have your charm. Every boy would find what I found in your arms. Everybody loves somebody sometime. And although my dream was overdue, your love made it well worth waiting for someone like.
A hit wherever they sang songs. Everybody loves somebody sometime. It was performed by Dean Martin, and his daughter Dina joins us today. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here.
That took us back immediately to your father.
I know, didn't it? And all of a sudden I was right there in 1964 watching him.
Was that the year it was a hit?
Yes, it was. In fact, that's the song that knocked the Beatles out of first place.
Ha ha.
No one else could do it. And then Dad did this song. He recorded it, became number one. He sent a telegram to Elvis Presley and to Frank Sinatra saying, you couldn't beat them, but I did. It was cute. Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yes.
I'd like to start with a little bit of a talk about your dad, if that's okay.
Of course.
He came from an Italian family. What was his real birth name?
Dino Paul Crocetti.
Crocetti.
Yes, Crocetti.
Wouldn't have gone down well with that
no,
name like
in
that?
In those days, no, that wasn't good. But now, you know, if his name was Dino Crocetti, you know, it'd be great. You know, people would love that now. But
who gave him the name Dean Martin then?
It was Sammy Watkins. And in fact, at those in those times, there was a singer called Nino Martini or something. And so then they changed, you know, Dad's name to Dino Martini. And they said, no, that's not going to be good. When Sammy Watkins heard it, he said, no, let's go with Dean Martin.
Mm.
And classy.
He and his great pal, Frank Sinatra, your Uncle Frank.
Uncle Frank.
Had incredibly distinctive voices. You could never mistake Frank Sinatra for anybody else.
Right.
You could never mistake Dean Martin for anybody else. What was it about Dean Martin's voice, do you think, now that you're an adult looking back?
For one thing, I think you can always hear him smiling. You can hear that there's a smile on his face. It's natural and beautiful. It's just God-given. It wasn't
Was it a trained voice?
No. He just, in fact, Frank Sinatra, because this was perfect. You know, I had asked my father if I could have voice lessons. He said, why? You know, you want to sound like everybody else in the choir? He said, first, you know, get your own voice. Make it you, you know, so that we can know it's you. So when I spoke with Frank Sinatra and I said, so, Uncle Frank, we were going to sing a song on my dad's TV show. I said, how do you do it? How do you get that great tone? How do you sing? He said, Dina, it's all about the air. I take in a deep breath, push from the diaphragm, and I can tell even before a note comes out if it's going to be on pitch or not. I said, really? Does my dad do that? He says, no, your father has no idea what he's doing. He just does it. He's a natural. You know, and you know, Frank Sinatra, I think, worked for every note he hit. And I think my dad, it just came out.
It just came rolling out.
Right.
He had, and we have to compress the story, he had a reputation, certainly here and I think around the place, mm-hmm. as being a heavy drinker,
right.
as being a womanizer, as being a good time man. You know, he used to get out with the boys and get up to mischief. How close to the reality was all of that? Was he a drunk?
No, not at all. You know, and what's funny, that was Martinelli's apple cider when he was, you know, doing his show.
It wasn't whiskey?
No. You know, I'm not saying that he wouldn't have a drink. You know, he'd have a martini, he'd have a wine with dinner, a beer probably after he'd play golf. It was his gimmick. And I'm still actually, you know, amazed to this day when people come up to me and they say, well, how did he do all of that when he was drinking all the time? I said, because he wasn't drinking all the time. He was obviously a very good actor because everybody thought he was. But, you know, he liked to be home every night. He wasn't someone who liked to go out. He would like to do his work, come home, get up early to play golf in the morning. I mean, different from what you would think.
Mm. He was not an alcoholic, maybe, but he was a workaholic, wasn't he?
He was a workaholic. Oh, yes. Yep. From a very young age, he was always working.
What was his work ethic? Did he ever sort of say it out loud, or did you just sort of imbibe it from what you observed?
Well, he was very precise. He was precise. Timing was everything for him. You have to be on time. I mean, he always taught me. He said, Dina, you've got to be early. Be early, know everything that you're supposed to do, remember all your lyrics and all of that. He was very organized. You would go in his bathroom, and there would be his comb, his tweezers, this, everything lined up perfect. His sock drawer, you know, it would say black, and there would be the black socks, and there would be, you know, blue socks. Everything had its place, and he was a stickler for time.
Yeah.
He knew you should, I think that's what made him organized, and he could compartmentalize everything that he had to do because he had so much to do.
Tell me about your mother, Betty.
Ah, Betty. She was amazing. Now, do you know that she wrote that hit song, For Your Love? Do you remember a song in 1958, and Ed Townsend recorded it? Funny, actually, because my dad also had a hit record on Return to Me right then in 1958. But if you remember, For Your Love, I Would Do Anything.
Oh, is that written by your mother?
My mother wrote that. Yes, she wrote that for my dad when they were divorced.
That's a sad story. It is a sad story of a love that went terribly wrong for her. It was a disappointment that marriage finished for her, wasn't it?
It was, and I just got chills when you mentioned that, because she was an amazing human being.
She sounds like when she was good, uh-huh. you know, when the marriage was good, when the kids were little and the marriage was intact, she sounds like a heck of a lot of fun.
Oh, she was so much fun. And for a while after they got divorced, because it would be Halloween and she would be making mashed potatoes with green dye in them, you know. She was fun.
And she was involved with her children, wasn't she?
She was involved and...
Was he?
No, not really. No, he was so busy, and you know, even in my book, and I said, no, he wasn't a good father. He was a good man. He didn't understand about hands-on, you know, picking the kids up at school, helping them with homework or things like that.
Did men in those days do that?
I don't think so.
Like other actors or other stars do that?
No, they didn't do that. But he was a great dad, if you know what I mean. But he wasn't the one. Well, you know.
You say he didn't like conflict, so he didn't sort of give you, smack you or anything like that.
No, but he would take us into the den, which was great. We had a den, and if we did something wrong, then you would hear from your brothers and sisters, uh-oh, Dad's taking you into the den tonight. You know, and so, oh, no, not the den. And we'd walk into the den and wait for him to come home. And then he would open the door and close the door behind him. And, of course, you know, the tears would come down. He'd go, no, it's okay. Just pretend like, you know, just let your mom know that I've talked to you. I said, well, what did I do? He said, well, you came home late for dinner 3 nights in a row. You can't do that. This is my house. You live by my rules. Oh. So, okay.
Was he a different man in public from the man you knew in private?
No, not really. I mean, he was nice and easy and fun. I mean, that's how he was at home.
What went wrong with the marriage, do you think?
I think he met Jeannie. He met my, you know, he fell in love with her. And I understand that completely. She's amazing.
She's been an amazing, well, she was an amazing stepmother to you, wasn't she?
She was absolutely amazing. And for her, when she married my dad and they had three children, And then to be able to open up and let us all come live with her, you know, in
his four children from his first marriage.
Yes, correct.
Did she love you, do you think?
Oh, yes, she did. And I don't know how she did it. I don't know how she would go from having her perfect little, you know, three children, you know, with
to having four older children.
Four older children, you know, coming in and because we were all a little nutty. You know, and it was a tough time, but yeah. She was amazing, and I really don't know how she did it. And she's a doll.
What was the house that you were living in with your mother after your father left? That sort of descended into a bit of chaos, didn't it?
It did, and what happened is it was something with the taxes that, you know, the managers didn't take care of the taxes properly, and suddenly they had to come back and repossess a lot of things, it seemed. So we lost our house, and then we ended up living with friends. Mm. And that was very tough for all of us, for the, you know, three girls and my brother Craig.
But eventually your father got custody of the four of you.
Yes, he did.
And so speaks to me of great sadness for your mother, obviously.
It was very sad for her. But she knew that Dad could do better for us. Mm. We would have a better life with him.
What do you think, if you can take us back to the 13 or 14 or 15-year-old Dina, what's she like?
By then, you know, I was really having a good time. I was at Beverly Hills Catholic School. I had friends. I felt, you know, safe and secure in our home. I had lots of friends, and I would be going to school with Desi Jr. and Lucy Jr., Tony Thomas, Danny Thomas's son. It was a nice, safe environment right then.
As far as I can discover from what I've read about you, and I've looked in back corners, we've sort of scurried around looking, the first appearance on stage that I can find is when you were a tree.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Oh, that's so cute.
What was
it
that?
It is. Over at Judy Garland's house on Mapleton. Oh, that was
Come on, tell the story.
That is so cute. We're over on Mapleton. And it was Liza and my sister, you know, Gail and Claudia and Craig and my brothers and Lorna and little Joey, he was there. And we said, well, let's put on a show, just like Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney. Let's put on a show. So we put on our show, and after, then Judy Garland came over to me, and she got down very close to me, and she said, Dina, you were the best tree I've ever seen. So she was my first critic. I was a good tree.
Very good.
It was great.
Very good. And that, you could only go up from that.
Exactly. I had my roots in the ground right there.
Ah, very well said.
That's cute.
Now, this I think you need to tell us about. True Love. What is this? What are we hearing here?
You're hearing something. It's to me a miracle. Absolute miracle. My handsome husband, John, who you met earlier in the booth, he found the original handwritten Nelson Riddle arrangement of True Love, the Cole Porter tune.
From High Society.
Right. We went into the studio, redid all of the tracks, fabulous musicians, changed the... we used that arrangement, actually, Nelson Riddle's. Then I took that to Capitol Studios in Hollywood, where my dad and everybody had recorded for hundreds of years, it seems, into Studio A, sat in my dad's chair. I used his microphone.
Ooh.
I was holding the very chart that he held. It said, True Love, Dean, written by Nelson Riddle up here. You know, I mean, Cole Porter, but the handwritten one. And I was there, and I hear in my headset, in the cams, I hear the beautiful strings and my dad's voice, and I couldn't sing. It was so overwhelming being at Capitol, hearing my dad's voice, knowing that Nelson Riddle had done this, that Cole Porter had written it. It was just too much for me. I did get through it. We did it again and again, and I walked into the booth after to hear it. Now, an interesting thing is Al Schmidt is the engineer who really put this together, and he's the one who did Nat and Nat King Cole's Unforgettable.
With Natalie Cole and
Nat
King Cole.
So he is the one who recorded that, and he recorded Dean and Dina and Nat and Natalie. And this is the beautiful song.
Thank you. nothing to do but to give.
Unmistakably a Nelson Riddle arrangement, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
fantastic.
Isn't it? That's it swings.
True love, and it was a swing song there. Dean Martin and his daughter Dina, who's with us today. How long ago was that recorded? How long did you put that down?
We did it at the end of 2013. It seems like we just did it.
I wonder what Dean would think of it. He'd think it was fabulous.
Oh, he would love it. He would love it.
When did you discover you had a voice to sing? That you'd got your father's genes?
Probably when I was about 16, because I had really concentrated on, dancing and, I took ballet lessons, of course.
You did ballroom dancing, too.
I did ballroom dancing with Jeff Bridges.
Now, tell me about that. How did you come to be dancing with Jeff Bridges?
In those days, in Beverly Hills, everybody went to cotillion. Now, Paul Hindread, remember the actor Paul Hindread? He had a cotillion. And it was at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel and the Beverly Hilton, come to think of it. And all the, parents, we all enrolled, their kids in learning ballroom dancing. And actually, Jeff Bridges and I, we were partnered because we were very good together. We won awards, for the Viennese waltz, the cha-cha, for the rumba.
That must have stood you in good stead in your performing career, sort of training.
It did. And also it gives you confidence and you stand up straighter and you know what you're doing. And Jeff was so much fun. And I remember now after school going over to his house in Westwood, California, and Lloyd Bridges was there. And let me see. Bo, right? Yeah, and his brother Bo. Mm. And we would rehearse because we wanted to be the best.
And
we wanted to get those awards.
You went off to England to learn to study acting. Now, I'd love to know how that all came about. Whose idea was that?
Dartington College of Arts. Well, they had everything that I wanted, that I wanted to learn. And also they were ones that accepted me. I sent out a little resume, and I wanted to go to Dartington. Those were in the days of, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and things were happening there.
What year are we talking?
66.
Okay.
I think so. So it was that time. I thought it might be, exciting and fun, and it was. And it was in a big castle. It was in a castle.
Castle.
And they had...
Did you have to audition or did you just send a resume?
Just a resume.
And did you study acting from the ground up? Did you start at, day one was, let's talk about voice production or movement or whatever?
No, actually, movement, yes, because there was... it was all artists. There were the artists, there were the dancers. There was, I think Martha Graham had her... it was that dance for there. So it was... You had a little bit of everything. And I remember gaining 10 pounds the first, month I was there.
Why?
Well, because you get there, and you get up in the morning, you have morning tea. Hmm. And then you go to class. Then you have afternoon tea. Hmm. And then you go to class. And then you have, lunch. And then you go to class. And then you have dinner. And it was Devonshire, right? So we got the Devonshire cream. And it was just a lot of eating, it seemed, to me. And I wasn't used to that or cream.
Keeps them warm.
Yeah, I guess so. It was a big cold castle. It really and truly was.
But did you have to adjust your accent at all?
Oh, yes.
Did you have to learn to speak English?
Yes, and I... of course, to play the parts. But I remember when I came home at summer, and I said, "Daddy, I'm going to take a bath." I said, "I can't stay here with you right now. I've got to take a bath," and he laughed at me, of course. But
you do it very well. That sounds good. So, what were some of the plays that you appeared in? You did a fair bit of Shakespeare, by the way.
Yes, we did. And I was Kate in The Taming of the Shrew. I was Ophelia.
You got big parts.
Big parts.
Dina, didn't you?
And I did get big parts, but I was like the one that fit the part there. For the other people who were there, it wasn't so much that I was, so good at that. Mm. It was just that I fit the part.
Did everybody know you were Dean Martin's daughter?
Yes.
Tell me what that was like for you as an adolescent. Was it something you embraced or tried to sort of hide at times?
I always embraced it, it wasn't my choice. I couldn't have, because I am Dina Martin. So wherever I go, even to this day, if someone, if I'm introduced to someone, they say, "Oh, I'm Dina Martin." any relation. So that's, it's not like I'm one of my sisters where, you know, hi, I'm Claudia Martin, and wouldn't even phase somebody.
Because you were given the name Dina.
Dina, yes. Dean with an A. And so it's there all the time, you know, from when I was that big, you know, in, you know, third grade, fourth grade, whatever, to and still to this day, of course.
When you were thinking of music to sing in public, did you naturally gravitate to the sort of material your father sang?
No, not at all. I started with country. And in fact, my first little hit record was Girl of the Month Club, and it was produced by Lee Hazlewood. He did Boots. These Boots.
Nancy Sinatra.
That's right.
Ah.
And so he did. He produced my dad with you know, going back to Houston, all of those songs. So I started with country, and it did pretty well. And I went to Nashville and was in the TV show Music City USA. So that's really what I loved. And then I moved into rock and roll, of course, in the
60s. And you knew Elvis Presley, of course, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did.
Did you know him well?
When I was very young, when I was eight is when I first met him at my dad's, at Paramount, actually, Paramount Studios, when I was standing outside my father's dressing room and Elvis came riding up on a bike. And that's when I met him.
Did you ever go on location with your father when he was making movies?
Yes, I did, and that was fun. We went to Arizona. He was doing Bandolero with, oh gosh, John Wayne and Raquel Welch. I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. And that was quite fun.
Yeah.
You know, I went with my mom, and it was just the three of us.
Did there come a time that you can remember when you thought, hang on, I'm the daughter of someone very famous? I'm just wondering if when you were very little, it's kind of part of the scenery, and you don't take for granted that everybody's parent is like yours. And then I think there comes a point and you think, well, actually, things are a bit different for other people. Do you remember finding that?
Well, not necessarily, because the people that I went to school with, so it was Frank Sinatra's children. So it was Lucy and Desi's children. So we all kind of grew up together. So through those years, we knew our parents were special. When I was a little girl, I had no idea, of course, until I went to see Rio Bravo at the Bruin Theater in Westwood. And we saw, you know, it said John Wayne, Dean Martin, Ricky Nelson. And I'm hearing the people around me going, oh, it's Dean Martin. Oh my gosh, you know, that's my dad.
Mm.
So right then when I saw Rio Bravo and hearing people around me, that, oh, he's very special.
So with that sort of realization, I think sometimes might come the idea, well, I have to step out from under the shadow of this person. I have to be my own person. What did he say anything to you about that, or did your mother or your stepmother say anything to you about becoming Dina Martin rather than being Dean Martin's daughter?
Well, you know what's funny is we were brought up the right way. We were all none of us are like insecure about who we are. First of all, everybody in my family has a great sense of humor. It wasn't just Dad. You know, it wasn't just Dean Martin in the house. There were all of us, and you know, everybody had their own personality.
Was there a lot of noise? A
lot of noise. Mm. Now imagine 7 children, and if we each had a friend over. So there's 14 right there, okay? So it was like, oh my gosh. And strong personalities. But we were all secure with who we were. You know, Dad taught us just to be down to earth. That's who we are. We never even thought, oh, this person, are they liking me because I'm Dean Martin's daughter? That never even came into our thinking. Oh, they're going to like me because I'm a good person or I'm fun. We never even thought that way.
Did politics come into it at all? I'm just wondering, you were a bit young. I mean, I know you were very aware of JFK and the assassination and all of that.
Oh, yes, that was...
And I think your dad worked with Marilyn Monroe on that film Something's Gotta Give, which was her last unfinished film, wasn't it?
That's right. In fact, we were all on holiday at the Alisal Ranch, all of us, Dad and all the kids, when we got the call.
That she had died.
That she had died, and so we all get in the limousines and drove back home.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never forget that, yeah.
Was that 1962? I think it was. And then he, JFK, was assassinated the following year.
Yes.
Did that hit the family like, I mean, because your father had connections. Frank Sinatra was a friend of the president, for instance.
Oh, yes. And, yeah, and the Lawfords, you know, Peter Lawford and Pat Lawford, his wife, they were over at the house all the time. I sang at Beverly Hills Catholic School in the choir for John F. Kennedy, for Jack Kennedy and Jackie O. Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing time, but I wasn't thinking about that. But then when he was assassinated and I was at Beverly Hills High School, come to think of it, when they came over the loudspeaker. You know, and everybody remembers where they were.
It absolutely riveted America, the world, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely.
I was when I heard, too.
We went home in a daze and just watched the TV, and it was amazing.
Dina, I want you to introduce this. This is you've chosen some of my favorite songs.
Good.
Bobby Darin. What's he doing and why is he doing it?
Oh, my God, he's doing Beyond the Sea. And I have adored Bobby Darin from the from a very little girl, and I actually, Dean Paul, my brother Dino, and I, we did the twist at our house on Mountain Drive in Beverly
Hills.
You're
going to get up and do it now?
We did the twist
in your chair
for Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
To Bobby Darin singing "Up a Lazy River Where the Old Mill Run," yeah. And I've just loved him, and I will never forget her sitting in our living room, and I'm doing the twist for her
for Marilyn Monroe.
For Marilyn Monroe.
Oh.
And
this is it.
Bobby, yes.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing somewhere. Fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond the star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt.
There he is, Bobby Darin, and the song that was written by Charles Trenet, Beyond the Sea, chosen by Dina Martin. And talking about acting, you made your big film debut in a film, I think I'm right, with Robert Mitchum.
Yes,
what
Robert
was the, what
Mitchum.
What was the film?
It was called Young Billy Young, and Angie Dickinson was also in it, David Carradine, John Carradine, Bobby Walker Jr. It was... the original script was called Who Rides with Wyatt. I don't know why they changed it. But that was really quite a lot of fun to be in Old Tucson with Robert Mitchum and Angie and all of these people just sitting around talking. Because it takes a long time to make a movie. You know, you set up, you do one scene, and then it's wait, wait, wait. So just to sit there and talk with all of these people, it was amazing.
It's an education in itself.
It was really
in a way,
an education,
isn't it?
Yes.
Jerry Lewis wrote the foreword to your book,
yeah.
About the book about growing up as your father's daughter.
Yeah.
And he and your father had a rare sort of connection in the comedy that they produced. They were both very funny. They were both,
yes.
You know, they were both very, very good for each other. They played off each other. But then they had a terrible falling out. What happened?
They had the falling out. It was, you know, as you say, you know, for 10 years they were unbelievable, the biggest comedy team ever. Two totally different personalities. Jerry, of course, who I adore and who has always been a good friend to me. He likes to write, direct, produce, do it. He wants to do everything. You know,
he's a control freak.
There you go.
Yeah.
The control freak. Whereas my dad, and that was perfect for my dad because my dad would like to come in, you know, he would, of course, arrive on time, hit his mark, do his thing, and then he'd want to leave. He'd want to come home, or he would want to, you know, go play golf or whatever it is. He wasn't like that. He wasn't like Jerry. And so it finally got to be too much for my dad because, you know, Jerry wanted him to do more things. And my father was a person where he would never get mad, never get upset. When he had it up to here, he'd had it up to here. And then it's over. And that's what happened.
He had a sort of stopping point, your dad,
yeah.
didn't he?
Yeah, it was.
Like he had a stopping point with your mother.
Yeah.
And it stopped. And then he had a stopping point with his second wife. Mm-hmm. It stopped. And a stopping point with his third wife.
Yes, right. And so, or like when he would come to the den. It's okay, just don't ever do it again.
Mm. End of story.
End of story. Okay, end of story. You know, and that would
so
never...
he didn't sort of harbour bitter feelings. Did he?
No.
Well, did he? Did, what about Jerry Lewis when he fell out and they were out, fell out for donkey's years, didn't they?
Jerry felt really, really... He felt terrible about it. And, you know, and we talk about it today. You know, he's so regretful of what had happened. But, and that last movie that they did. But for Dad, you know, that it was over. It was over. He would go on his way, and that was fine. He said, you know, he went home and, you know, they had a fried egg sandwich, you know, and he felt fine. Jerry, of course, would lament about that forever.
When did they reconcile?
It was, that was amazing. And I'm trying to think, was it 70? It was on the MDA telethon. And I was watching the MDA telethon, as I always did every year. And I'm sitting, I think it was in New York at the time. And I'm watching, and all of a sudden I look, and I see Frank Sinatra walk out onto the stage, and there's Jerry. And I look in the back, and I know I see my dad walking. I could tell his walk from a mile away. I said, are you kidding me? He's coming onto the telethon. He hasn't spoken to Jerry in 25 years. And Frank walked out, and he said, you know, Jerry, I have a man who loves what you do. And then I saw Dad walk out, and they hugged each other. And it was a jaw-dropper for me and for Jerry was hysterical because he looked at Dad and he said, so you've been working? He had the number one, you know, TV show, you know, my dad. But it was a great line after all those years.
Yes.
And they hugged. And it was an unbelievable moment. One of the top 100 moments in TV, you know, when they put that on.
Yeah. I actually saw it on YouTube.
Did.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It was lovely, lovely, lovely
70,
thing.
70 something.
There is this tragedy in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Your beloved brother,
Dino.
Dino. What happened?
And it was just I just got chills when you said that. He was an incredible pilot. He was, well, first of
and
all,
and you're a
Dino,
pilot too, aren't
yes,
you?
I am. You know, Dino got me to love, well, I don't know if I should call him Dean Paul. I mean, he was Dino to me all my life. But whatever he wanted to do, he was brilliant at what he did. He would set his goal and he would accomplish it. He was an unbelievable tennis player. He played Wimbledon. He loved flying. He started with helicopters, which is one of the most difficult things to fly. I mean, you got this going and that going. Mm. He did that. He had a hit group when he was 16 years old, Dino, Desi, and Billy. In fact, he was a little bit younger than that. He bought his first Ferrari from the earnings that he made off of I'm a Fool. Couldn't even drive the car because he was too young. It would sit in the garage and he would, you know, turn it on every day so the motor would or the engine would not just die. But everything he did it all the way. And when he wanted to become a pilot in the Air National Guard, you know, he went to the Pentagon, he spoke to people, and he worked hard, and he became a pilot. And I remember him coming over to my house. He'd say, Dina, you know that when you look up in the sky, know that I'm up there protecting you.
What happened?
Vectored him into a mountain. He was on a training mission, he and his co-pilot. And it's the same mountain. They vectored him into the same mountain that took the life of Dolly Sinatra.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, same time. And I remember I was someplace. I was working out at a gym. And I saw it on TV that his plane had gone missing. I could not believe it. And it was days before they found it. And everything that went into that, and Reagan sent out the Air National Guard to try and find him. And finally, it still just doesn't seem real to me.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And your dad, it must have been crushing for your father.
Yes. It was. You're not supposed to lose your children.
No. Your father died on Christmas Day alone, 1995, I think was the
1995,
year.
1995, yes.
And he was alone, according to your book, although his genie said she was there.
You know, it's so interesting. And we knew on Thanksgiving when Dad didn't show up for, you know, because we would all get together for Thanksgiving. And then for Christmas Eve, because we would all get together on Christmas Eve. So John and I were over there, and everybody's at the house, at Jeannie's house, at Mom's house. And we're having a great time. But he was missed. But we know, you know, that your dad is not feeling good tonight. Okay, we understand. And John and I, we stayed until 3:30. Just talking with Mom. You know, we were just talking and going on. And then we, John and I left and we went home. And then I got the call the next morning from our son saying, you know, I'm sorry, Mom, but, you know, Pop passed away. I said, what? I didn't know. Mickey got the call first. So I know what time that happened. And then, of course, the next day I see that, you know, Mother had given an interview and she said she was with Dad, you know, saying, let go, let God. Although that had happened a couple days before, you know, and... it was just for me, and you know, and someone said, you know, well, why would you say that? Why would you put that there? Why would
she wanted to be there?
Well, yeah, because she wanted to be there with him, but I was with her when it happened, so it was a thing. You can't take away my memory because I was there at your house when Dad passed away. You weren't with him; you were with me. Mm. So it was a. You know, it's still a funny thing to me. You know, it's, for me, it's what really happened. You know, so that's what's important to me.
Satchmo.
Oh, love him. Love
you
him.
Chose
My
him.
Dad, I know, I love him. And when I went down to the Dean Martin show and watched him, because he was on a couple times with Dad, he was just an amazing, I still don't know how he sings that way, but when he talks... with this song, and he just touches your soul.
I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're mine much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Ah, that's good to hear, isn't it? Louis Armstrong, what
yes.
a wonderful world.
What a wonderful world. And it's so timely right now, you know, of course, with all the craziness going on, you know, we've got to do something.
Yeah. Our guest is Dina Martin. We haven't got very much time, but I want you to tell us what is Bodies by Dina.
Bodies by
what
Dina.
What was or is Bodies by Dina?
Bodies by Dina. It's funny, and I'm trying to think, it had to be the 70s, late 70s, when Jane Fonda was doing her Jane Fonda workouts and everything. And now maybe not to look at me, but I always had a weight problem.
Come on.
I know.
You
know,
nothing
I mean,
of you.
I know. Well,
7 stone ringing wet. Your husband's looking at me and saying, no, you didn't have a weight problem.
The reason why, no, there was a weight, well, first of all, I'm Italian and Irish, okay? And so then you have a tendency to gain weight.
I know you had a weight problem. You didn't weigh enough.
I didn't weigh enough.
Yes.
No, but I found out, you know, exercising, you know, if you exercise and eat right, everything's going to be just fine. And so that's what I did. So I changed my eating habits and I started working.
But you turned it into a business, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So I started working out and I had, you know, friends who... said, oh my God, what are you doing? You know, you look fantastic. There's a difference between being thin and fit. You know, I mean, there are fat, thin people, you know. So anyways, it was important for me. And I was watching Jane Fonda and I said, well, wait a minute, I should be doing this. I can do fitness videos and I can start a company called Bodies by Dina and get all of my friends in shape. And it was the perfect thing at that time. Mm. Bodies by Dina.
Gosh. So you've proved yourself as a you're a pilot, you're a businesswoman, you're a performer. And what are you, in your own mind, what are you predominantly? Would you call yourself an entertainer?
An entertainer, yes. Mm-hmm.
And when did you devise the show that you've brought to Australia?
Well, it's been growing. It's been, you know, it's kind of has a whole life of its own. I started, and I thought this should be the memories are made of this tour, so that I can bring memories here, of course, make new memories for people in Australia. It's putting together the songs and a story, so that people will come to this show and get a sense of course, Dean Martin, because everybody in Australia or everybody in the world loves Dean Martin. Let them experience that. And also experience Dina Martin with my new songs, the ones that, that we have. So it's putting together the songs all in under the concept of memories are made of this.
The sweet, sweet memories you gave of me. You can't beat the memories you gave of me.
Take sweet, sweet, one fresh and tender kiss. Add one stolen night of bliss.
The memories you gave me.
One girl, one boy, some grief, some joy. Memories are made of this.
The memories you gave me.
Don't forget a small moonbeam.
You can't beat the memories you gave me.
Fold in lightly with a dream.
The memories you gave me.
Your lips and mine, two sips of wine. Memories are made of this.
The memories you gave me.
Then add the wedding bells, the one house where lovers dwell, three little kids for the flavor. Stir carefully through the days, see how the flavor stays. These are the dreams you will savor
with his blessings from above.
You can't beat the memories you gave me.
Serve it generously. One man, one wife, one love through life. Memories are made of this. Memories are made of this.
Memories are made of this. Dean Martin and one of his early hits from the 1950s after a split up with Jerry Lewis. You're listening to a special edition, of course, of Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Next week and the week after, a couple of other special programs. But now, another song by Dean Martin. Now, he, of course, in the 1960s, with different producers, just like Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis, were able to keep at the top, even though the music scene had changed. This was from the hit sound of Dean Martin, Come Running Back.
If you find your new love isn't what you thought it would be, if your nights are lonely now and you need more sympathy, baby, come running back to me. Come running back to me. Back to the arms that long to hold you forever. Find his lips don't fill you like mine used to do, and you see me smiling at you when he's holding you. Baby, come running back to me. Come running back to me. Back to the arms that long to hold you forever and ever. Realize that you were wrong to say goodbye. Don't allow your foolish pride to let true love go by. Baby, come running back to me. Come running. down on and by. Come running by.
And with that, we've come to the end of this week's edition of the program. If you want to contact us, our email address is pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. We're going to leave you today with Dean Martin with an arrangement by Nelson Riddle, On the Street Where You Live. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Perron, wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
I have often walked down this street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once am I several stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live. All the lilac trees in the heart of town, can you hear a lark in any other part of town? Does enchantment pour out of every door? No, it's just on the street where you live. And oh, the towering feeling, just to know somehow you're near. The overpowering feeling that any second you may suddenly appear. People stop and stare, they don't bother me, for there's nowhere else on earth that I would rather be. Let the time go by, I won't care if I can be here on the street where you live. People stop and stare, they don't bother me, for there's nowhere else on earth that I would rather be. Let the time go by, I won't care if I can't be here on the street where you live. Can be here on the street where you live. Can be here on the street where you live.